Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
As the year 2020 draws to a close, we take a look back at local authors and their books of the past year. Dan Barnett knows these books well because he writes the weekly book review column for the Chico Enterprise Record, The Bibliophile. He also teaches philosophy at Butte College. Dan Barnett, welcome.
Nancy, thank you so much. I have on my computer screen book covers from the year in review, and I am really overwhelmed at the variety this year. Every year, and I think it's, 125 years we've done this in a row?
Well,
every year.
Always in the past, we get together in the studio and you bring your box of books, and I have a stack of books. And this year, you mentioned you called them up on your screen because we are each in our home studio. But I think I'm familiar with, I don't know about most of the books that you read this year. And so I'm looking forward to hearing your take on them.
Well, this year, it seems, in thinking about past years, the variety is the greatest that it's ever been. There are themes that in past years, for instance, memoirs, that many, many local writers and writers who have come in and made a guest presentation have focused on. This year, it seems that the writers locally have broadened to embrace fantasy fiction, have embraced books about the campfire in various ways, everything from a children's book to a deeply reported book to a book of photography. And I am really impressed by the quality of writing. Often these are self-published books, but there's a great deal of thought that has gone into many, many, many of these books. And this year seems to be the most varied, the most interesting. Of course, I would say that for most years past, but I'm very, very impressed by the variety. And some of the books introduce me to worlds unknown. And that has been very exciting. Maybe that's partly why we read, is that we enter into experiences in places that we haven't been before. And this year was certainly no exception. And it really rises to the top of my list. We were taken into a strange world called The Crossing Way with Lynn Elliott's book called The Crossing Way. Mike Finley, anthropologist, took us into cultural traditions of ancient Mesoamerica. David Dirks, who used to live in Chico, told us about the sounds of worship and how that relates to worship experiences and more. And so, really impressed.
My guest is Dan Barnett, and he writes The Bibliophile for the Chico Enterprise Record. He's the book reviewer. And I feel the same way, sentiments that you're expressing, Dan. We've read books on Vietnam, for example. And when I would pause, I would have to remind myself where I was. I was so deep into the story that I just forgot where I was. And I came across this quote, "Reading gives us someplace to go when we have to stay where we are." And maybe that's why we're getting such a wonderful variety of books this year, because reading can take us places we can't go, because right now we can't go anywhere pretty much.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that many local writers are trying their hands at new things, new experiences, pushing themselves into doing something that's not just an easy thing, but is a harder sort of process. It's really hard to construct a fantasy novel, for instance, because it has to have its own inner logic. And a science fiction novel has a little bit of science and theory thrown in. And I'm thinking of a book called The Empath by Michael Agliolo, and very interesting sort of science fiction or fantasy kind of novel that begins very small and then opens up until the whole world is at stake for the protagonist. And then again, The Crossing Way, a young adult book by Lynn Elliott, which takes language and tales from Latin America, from Wales.
Which is where he is from, by the way. Lynn Elliott is from Wales.
Yeah. And kind of mixes this incredible stew into a world that has its own inner logic.
Along those lines, that Lynn Elliott, the age group that he wrote The Crossing Way for, there's a lady in Hayfork. She writes under the name Mabel Wren, W-R-E-N, from Hayfork. And she wrote a book for that same age group. And the book is The Seagulls Are Calling, A Mystery on the High Seas. Mm-hmm. So, these books kind of came out about the same time. I think that books for this age group, mysteries.
And one of the books that really has stuck with me is a book that M. Day Hampton wrote called Behind Picket Wire, Paradise Resident. And what the author has done is to really take the life of former Paradise Mayor Howard Johnson, a businessman in town, and to take the late Howard Johnson's life and to fictionalize that, to bring various elements into a survivalist kind of story in which the main character called Red Johnson is up in Magalia, and suddenly he finds himself living absolutely alone. And he goes out the door and out into the edge of his property. And it's as if the world was 300, 200, 100 years ago. There were no roads, no people, nothing but his dog. And there's this great travel adventure as he goes from one end of the country almost to the other end. And it's called Behind Picket Wire because Howard Johnson, the real Howard Johnson, wrote a book some years ago called Picket Wire, in which he talked about hunting stories and so forth. And this new story, Behind Picket Wire, really transmogrifies the elements of his life into a novel I just couldn't put down because the travels were so interesting and the flashbacks that read as he yearns for his children, his wife, the past comes flooding back and it's intermixed with his current experiences. So it took him 2 days, he writes, Red says, or actually the narrative says it took him 2 days to reach the area known as Garden of the Gods in his journey. It was more spectacular than he'd imagined. Red had seen the imposing statues of sedimentary rock for the last 30 miles. The closer he got, the grander the spires became. Out of thin soil and surrounded by low-growing green-gray shrubs of spiky yucca, the imposing families of red rock jutted hundreds of feet into the air. They were ambassadors from another time and looked like a computer-generated backdrop on a movie set. The coral salmon color of the stone was marvelously in utter contrast with the blue sky above and the green sage and scrub pines at its base. So there's description for you.
This is book reviewer Dan Barnett. He writes the Bibliophile column, a weekly column for the Chico Enterprise Record. And remind us again, Dan, whose book you were reading from then.
This is from M. Day Hampton, H-A-M-P-T-O-N, writing a novel called Behind Picket Wire. And really highly recommend it. It's a kind of a survivalist tale, and yet a tale of love and yearning. And it's a sort of mystery as well, because you want to find out what has happened to everyone. All the humans seem to have disappeared. What has happened?
After a break, Dan Barnett and I will continue our look back at local authors of 2020. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with Enterprise Record Book Review columnist Dan Barnett. Well, so many of these stories evoke emotion from me, these books that I would read, and they would make me cry. And a lot of these were books because of the campfire. There have been quite a few books about the campfire, but they all have their own kind of personality, their own emphasis. And one that I found myself crying in was Fire in Paradise, an American Tragedy, Alastair G. and Danny Anguiano. And they both write for The Guardian. And I know you read their book, too.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that at the very end, and this is a deeply reported story and a personal story as well, they say Chris Hale, the former Cal Fire Division chief, had observed the fire developing on November 8th and sent Facebook messages to residents. And he seemed as if he couldn't quite believe all the pieces of the awful puzzle that had slotted so neatly together. First, there was the wildland town on its overlook, an unlucky spot because heat rises and fire wants to go up. Then there was the ranging north wind. Not least, there was the fire season that stretched on well past when it used to. He said, what happened in the campfire is the fire that professionals knew was going to happen, but I don't think anyone foresaw a whole town wiped off the map. This was the perfect fire. Perfect not in a good sense, but Fire in Paradise, an American Tragedy, and part of that tragedy is that Paradise certainly has not been unique. Most recently, we have the North Complex fire and Berry Creek and other communities devastated. And this will happen again. And so there is a sense where it resonates out.
You were just reading from Fire in Paradise, and one of the co-authors, Danny Anguiano, actually worked at the Enterprise Record for a while. She went to Chico State.
Yep.
Did you happen, you probably didn't know her because you're in your own world reviewing books.
That's right, I was. So I didn't meet her in person. But as I said, it's a very personal experience, especially for her, in making sense of what happened and putting together the stories of many people who experienced the fire, and trying to figure out not only what happened during the fire and before, of course, but also the aftermath. What does it mean to come back together and to rebuild? We've seen tremendous progress over the last couple of years, and yet at the same time, it seems so far away, the time when all of the dead trees will be removed and the town will be bustling once again.
This is why I so appreciate the record that photographers have left for us, their books, Douglas Keister, for example, and Ron Schwager, these photographers who have recorded these scenes from Paradise for us. And they're beautiful books. Of course, I can't, on the radio, we can describe them, but I so appreciated their work.
Yeah, Ron Schwager's book and Phil Midling writing the text, the book called The California Campfire, Reflections and Remnants. It's a coffee table book. It shows in detail, not so much the devastation, but the patterns, the colors, the sorts of things that intense heat does. And it's a strange sort of beauty in the midst of horror, really. Then there's a different take in Steve Frischaud's book, My Name is Haley and I Live in Paradise. And the idea is, what kind of experiences did you have before the fire hit? And how does a child come to grips with what has happened and that aftermath? And then Carrie Carter's book, Paradise Isn't Lost.
Well, just one more thing about Steve Frischaud's book. He is a well-known illustrator. He's illustrated so many children's books. But as far as I know, this is his debut as a writer.
As a writer, yes.
Yeah.
And this was really a labor of love on his part. He lost so much of his original drawings. And this is a way really to give back to the community.
Well, his was another book that brought me to tears, Dan. Steve Frischaud's book. Yeah,
and especially as you see some of the Paradise landmarks. And I'm looking at the book right now. It can't see me through the radio, but you can imagine that. And there is a sense of rebuilding. The one of the last scenes shows a house being constructed, and Haley finding a puppy. And there is a sense of kind of normalcy, but it's a new sort of normal. And this is done, of course, all of this happened before the pandemic hit. And so all of that is factored in our own experience, and those who survived the fire, those who lost so much, were still
now,
in
I wonder if
that difficult time.
Say, those of us who experienced the fire, that included you.
Well, my wife and I, we were actually out of town, out of state, celebrating her dad's 90th birthday, and or 85th birthday. Anyway, it was up there somewhere, and we began to get texts past a little after 6:30 in the morning of November 8th, And it was just horrific as we saw things unfolding. One of the scariest moments was on NBC Nightly News, they showed a house on fire. It was a Mediterranean-style house, and we identified it as just down five or six or seven houses from where we lived, and indeed so. And so a couple of houses in our neighborhood burned, but the rest survived. So did ours. A lot of cleanup, though, many months of dealing with smoke damage and so on.
Well, you mentioned the houses that were damaged, and people lost personal belongings that meant so much to them. But going back to Steve Rashad, he lost his work as well as his home and personal belongings. It was all the more tragic to for people who lost their livelihood.
What is so wonderful about Steve, and it's happening, it happened this year as well, is every October there is a challenge for artists to post a drawing every day called Inktober. And he's been doing that on Facebook. And the wonderful thing is that rather than simply say so much is lost and, you know, maybe I'll go into a different line of work, he continues to draw and to serve the community with his work. And that is so exciting that there's so much artistry in him. And now, as you say, he's branched out in writing, My Name is Haley and I Live in Paradise. And it's exciting to see what might come next as far as books from Steve Rashad.
Let me remind listeners, my guest is Dan Barnett. He is the book review columnist for the Chico Enterprise Record. His column is called Bibliophile. He also teaches philosophy at Butte College. And we are looking back at the books by local authors in the year 2020, which was, oh my goodness, what a year. And what other books impressed you, Dan?
I was about to mention a moment ago, Carrie Carter's book, Paradise Isn't Lost, Embracing Resilience in the Face of Loss, another personal story, but the focus is not on the tragedy, but on how do you survive that tragedy and continue on. And that's important for many authors as they think about the writings that they're doing and how to move forward if they experience tragedy, and how to bring their perspectives and their understanding of the world to readership. It was interesting that Greg Cuzzone, you know, teaches a religious studies department at Chico State University.
And has written quite a few books himself.
This year published a book called Negotiating Science and Religion in America, Past, Present, and Future. And Greg did a deep dive into the history of what oftentimes people think of as warfare between science and religion. And he makes great effort to define science and to define religion. And he wants to say it's way more nuanced than that. And he covers some fascinating subjects as well as, since his interest, as you know, is with what are called emerging adults, young people between about 18 and 30. And what sorts of issues do they have? There's certainly perennial issues dealing with creation and evolution and issues of sexuality. But emerging is issues of technology and what technology is doing to us in ways that maybe the past has never actually experienced. And the sense of optimism that he has in his book, that young people are not simply turning away from religion wholesale, that they are exploring spiritual themes, and have become what he called bricoleurs, that is, people, actually you would know it, because since you know French.
Yes, a French word.
The Spotify sort of thing, a little bit of this and a little bit of that, putting some things together in order to make sense of their lives. And he's optimistic that there is a sense of religion in some form is still very, very meaningful in people's lives, even those who had identified as nones, N-O-N-E-S, that is, those who don't subscribe to that they would say, I don't subscribe to an organized religion. Nevertheless, spirituality becomes very important to them.
You know, Dan, speaking of none, N-O-N-E, one author I read said when he was in the military, they said, well, what religion? He said, well, I don't have one. And the guy said, well, I've got to put something down. Now, this was some time ago. Here's how times have changed, I think. And the guy taking the information was insistent that he had to list one. And so the draftee said, well, what's your religion? And so he said, Methodist. And he said, okay, put down Methodist for me. And today, the young people, this age group, emerging adults that that Greg Cuzzona teaches, they want to be, this seems to be my take on it, they want to be spiritual, but they don't want to be limited by a particular religion.
Yes. And Greg sees real optimism in that, because although emerging adults will talk about a kind of tension between science and religion, they see that perhaps in the outer world, but they don't see it in their own lives, that they have come to terms with both. And so there is a sense that young people or emerging adults have really negotiated science and religion. And Greg's history is fascinating, because he covers the eugenics movement in the United States. It was really interesting that oftentimes it was progressive pastors who embraced the idea of eugenics, of making people better. That was certainly before World War II. After World War II, then the eugenics movement fell out of favor, obviously. But it is still part of the American heritage, and we may not recognize that the significance of that movement. So there's all kinds of gems in the book. Again, Greg Cuzzona's book, Negotiating Science and Religion in America.
My guest is Dan Barnett. He is the book reviewer for the Chico Enterprise Record. He writes in a weekly column called Bibliophile. And you and I read some of the same books because we read local authors. And I mentioned that I read a book by a Vietnam vet that was so absorbing. And then you reviewed a book by a Vietnam vet. Don Graham is who I'm thinking of. And who was Don Graham?
Don Graham worked for years at Chico State. And one of the things that happened to him is he went to Vietnam, but he returned whole. And his book is called Coming Home Whole: A Draftee's Foretold Journey to and from Vietnam. And in the summer of 1968, Chico State had accepted him into the master's program in psychology. And so it looked like everything was all set up for him, but the draft board was hounding him. And one thing led to another, and he found himself a draftee. But he was okay. He came home okay. And it talks about the choices that he was faced. Does he go and be drafted? Does he go to Canada? Does he try to hurt himself so that he'll get a deferment of some kind? And he decided
to... I don't know about you, Dan, but that's the generation, my generation, that was what was going through their minds. Do I go to Canada? What do I do? They were faced with a real dilemma. And so what did Don Graham decide?
Was he able to decide? he didn't have conscientious objection as part of his past. He went to Canada just to try it out with a friend, and he felt absolutely isolated. He didn't want to maim himself to get 4F status. He didn't want to go to prison, so he went into the Army. And it's interesting because it isn't a gruesome tale, but really a bunch of coincidences. And Graham writes about, to quote him, some immensely powerful force watching over him, mediated by his mother and her spiritual mentor named David, and a psychic who predicted he'd return whole from the war. So it's an interesting combination of going to what many people experienced as a terrible and gruesome place if they returned at all, and having a relatively okay experience.
In fact, I find that sad that he is somewhat the exception. Coming home whole was more the exception. And so that he puts that in the title of his book. And that's so sad, I think. I mean,
he kept asking himself, how can this be? How can this be? And so that was a very different take, and in a way, an unexpected take, because many books, certainly about Vietnam, are about the horrors that people found there.
If they're even willing to write about it, I can understand why they don't want to write about it. So we don't really know, I think, the most horrific of these stories.
Another fact book, it's not really a memoir, but really a business kind of book by Catherine and Michael Redman. They're founders of Half a Bubble Out, which is an ad agency in the Chico area. And they wrote a book called Fulfilled, talking about a BHAG, B-H-A-G, which stands for Big Hairy Audacious Goal. And the idea is how can you channel your passions into realizing this big, hairy, audacious goal? How does passion enter in and help you build a strategy for developing a business? Especially important, of course, in a time of pandemic and so many changes. It's sometimes going from one tier to the next, a very restrictive tier. Then business, it's a shockwave that they have to make incredible changes in a very short period of time. And Catherine writes, many times I have looked at Michael and said, I knew this would be hard, but I didn't know. The challenge of walking through failures as well as triumphs, of days when the future looks bright and days when you are convinced the end is imminent. And so Fulfilled is a good book for these very difficult times to talk about. You know, you don't have to throw all of your dreams away. You can have a big, hairy, audacious goal and in some way, even now, begin to realize that goal, not in its fullness yet, but there will come a time with vaccines and we hope sooner rather than later, where businesses, on-ground businesses, will be able to begin to swing open their doors, invite customers in, and really begin, owners would really begin to realize their dreams. So
in fact, Dan, that's a question I like to ask people just in conversation. What is your dream, or what are your dreams? And I actually write them down sometimes and kind of put them away and forget about them. And then it comes around that I love supporting somebody in their dream, whatever their dream is. I love being able to support them in that dream.
And so, yeah.
This book that you were just describing, it sounds like reading their book would encourage a person to say, well, what is my dream? Because that's what the title of the book is, Fulfilled.
And sometimes people dream of seeing birds, of just the right bird that they've been looking for, if they're a bird watcher. Mm-hmm. And Roger Lederer released an incredible book called The Art of the Bird, another coffee table book, The History of Ornithological Art Through 40 Artists. And
so this is kind of a step outside, because I think of him as a scientist, but with this latest book, he becomes an art historian.
Right. And in the book, he goes for Baroque. He starts with the Flemish Baroque artists from 1580 to 1700, arranged roughly chronological, so it brings us up to the present time. And looking at really short biographies and interesting comments about some artists, some we know about certainly, James Audubon. But interesting thing about Audubon is that he wasn't able to go out into the wilderness and paint birds in trees, and so he often did it from birds that were no longer living. And what Lederer points out is that when you do that, when you perch a bird in a certain way, it may be that you're going to end up painting the bird in a way that the bird really doesn't act in real life. And so with a more scientific bent, many of the field guides that came out try to show birds in more natural habitat. And then he talks about Janet Turner and some of her huge, beautiful paintings that feature birds as the painting. We're not observing birds. We're just drawn in to the life of the bird.
And you know, I was so glad he included a chapter on Janet Turner, because she's a local name. There's a museum named for her on Chico State campus. But I had no idea of the extent of her reputation as an artist.
Yeah. Oh, it's just, it really is fascinating. And for those of us who, you know, can say, well, I see vultures out in my backyard and some crows and maybe some swallows. There are other birds that are even more beautiful. and what Roger does in the book is to highlight them through the eyes of these artists. And really trace how, at first, in the 16th century or so, in the West, the culture really emphasized birds as a kind of symbol of wealth and privilege, and they were items that were part of a person's surroundings, not living, of course, to show how accomplished the person was. And then over the centuries, the emphasis on capturing birds in their native habitat and of painting them almost in a scientific way, and then branching out again and keeping the photorealistic painting style, but also branching out into certainly more symbolic styles, not symbolizing wealth or privilege as it did hundreds of years ago, but pictures of birds that take you into their environment and make the viewer even more sensitive to the importance of birds in our natural world. So it's a change of symbolism. This fascinating book.
My guest is Dan Barnett, the book reviewer for the Chico Enterprise Record, writing a weekly column, Bibliophile. Dan Barnett and I will continue our look back at local authors of 2020 after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. This is Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest is Dan Barnett, who writes the weekly Bibliophile column for the Chico Enterprise Record. I love books that cause me to say, I had no idea. And when I was reading about John J. Audubon, I had no idea. I always assumed that was his original name he was born with, but it was not. He actually had a French name, Audubon.
He did.
One of the heroes of bird history, and he was born in Haiti.
Just amazing. Little biographies that give you information that that you just wouldn't know normally. And it just adds to the appreciation and the labor that many of all of these painters really put into their work.
Well, I find Roger not only, well, this newest book is art history, really, but his previous books on birds. I attended a lecture after he wrote Bones and Bird Feathers, and I forgot the full title of it. But the lecture itself was so interesting, I didn't want it to end. And he elaborated, gave more information than he was able to include in the book that he was talking about.
Yeah. Another book that was really fascinating to me, book of Chico history, really, Chico area history, was by Andy Mark, called The Stories of the Humboldt Wagon Road. And it's interesting that Bidwell kind of started it, but it says, while Bidwell's dream of Chico being part of a major supply route from California to Nevada and Idaho came to an end, the road was still useful in other ways. Regular stage traffic to points from Chico to Susanville continued, and the road opened the foothills and mountains to stands of virgin timber to supply an expanding logging industry, and the resort business began to thrive. And it's fascinating as Mark looks at the development of the road and, say, the first 100 miles or so out of Chico, and the various small communities that developed, just fascinating. And the road sometimes was really bad. There were bad guys robbing the stage. It gave way to the timber industry. And it's just absolutely fascinating how important a roadway was. Now we see it more of as, oh, you know, it's a road. But
you know, I love local history like this too. And each time when I go downtown Chico and I come to that rather weird intersection of roads, and I remember reading in a book about the Humboldt Road, and this was the shape that it was because this is where the wagons were able to turn around.
Yeah.
The space was so large. And so I find the Humboldt Road a fascinating subject.
Yep.
And Mark McKinnon wrote this book entitled Book Marks.
Yep. Yeah, and there are two Mark McKinnons in our world. One is a retired instructor at Bew College. This is not that Mark McKinnon, different one. And over the years, what Mark did is capture many, many thoughts and ideas, his own as well as quotations from others. This is not a scholarly work in the sense that you'll find all of the specific references and page numbers and so forth. This is more like a commonplace book where just thoughts and ideas are jotted down over the years and then published.
Well, since we're on this subject and the book with Mark, Andy Mark wrote about stories of the Humboldt Wagon Road.
Yes.
And what did you learn when you read his book?
Well, the Humboldt Road, one we are talking about, the sense of how its importance really to Chico, and that John Bidwell had a dream as mining opened up, especially silver mining in Nevada, that this would really put Chico on the map. It did, but in a different sort of way. And the fun thing about the book is there are a lot of little stories about stuff that happened, from shootouts to bad roads and accidents and snowfalls and lots of scary bear stories. The bears were abundant back then. Flume rides, and just all kinds of things, and tragedies as well. Barney Cusick in 1888, there was the great tragedy. He and his family had this tragedy when the lumberman's 5-year-old daughter Maggie passed away from a 2-week stomach ailment. And people wrote in to the newspaper to express their condolences and so forth. And so there is the development of industry, but also the personal stories of loss and what it means for really some of these pioneers, those who pioneered the roadway, to live their lives in 1888, more than, you know, a long time ago. It's really helpful. So when you read books about the Humboldt Wagon Road, that you're not stuck in a rut, that you recognize that there's more to living than just your present moment, and that there's much in history to appreciate, and still a lot of history to be made. So the bottom line is we don't give up. We shouldn't give up. So I've appreciated so many of these books this year. So many worlds to enter in, and so many moments of enjoyment in reading these books.
Well, Dan, you've just given us some examples of your puns, and I don't know if your readers know what a punny guy you are. But I got the way you concluded a book review. A gentleman named James Dimmitt wrote a book, which it's fascinating that somebody would write this. the first 100 years of the Chico Police Department.
Yeah.
And, you conclude that review with a couple of puns there. But tell us first about this book, this history of the Chico Police Department.
Yeah, James Dimmitt works in the Sacramento area now, and he was on the force when Chief O'Brien was there, and decided that he would put together a little pamphlet of the history of the Chico Police Department. And one day, someone asked him, "Well, how what is the number of Chico police chiefs with Chief O'Brien?" And nobody knew. And so that set him to digging even deeper into newspaper accounts and other records from Chico PD. And he's compiled them. And it's there must be thousands, it seems. It's like 452 pages. And many, many short little excerpts from newspapers, longer articles on Chico Police, and it just fascinating.
I would like to read your last paragraph of this review. Marshal James O. Weed was joined by the town's first two police officers, Benjamin True and W. A. Taylor. Today, so many years later, weed is still an issue. The department endeavors to remain true to its calling and to tailor its responses to the city's needs. Dan Barnett, ever the punster.
I love it.
I got a kick out of it myself.
Yes. And James wrote thanking me for the column. So his good graces. That's good.
Yeah, I'm glad to get this chronicle of the Chico Police Department. It sounds fascinating. And I so enjoy talking to you about the local authors, Dan. It's such a pleasure. Thank you for coming on and giving us your take on these local authors.
Nancy, thank you so much. It's always a joy.
I'll remind listeners that my guest has been book reviewer Dan Barnett. He writes a weekly column, Bibliophile, for the Chico Enterprise Record. Thank you so much, Dan.
Listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.